616, your home for all fans Marvel main continuity. Hello, everybody. This is episode 57 of Route 616. We are all back once again.
That's a chunk.
Yeah. What?
Oh,
the synopsis?
No, 57. That's a lot.
Yeah, we've been doing
this
for
a
while.
That's like a Heinz flavor.
It only took us a year to start getting into actually good comics. That weren't what, called
we're
Spider-Man.
We're getting into good comics?
Supposedly. Sometimes.
When did that happen?
Yeah, well, you just read the Hulk arc. And
yeah,
I mean,
that
Hulk arc is still way better than anything that Strange Tales was putting out.
I'm a little bitter still, but...
Well, you got a lot to be bitter about.
It ruined Hulk for like 4 years for me.
Yeah, so I want to say something pop culture related.
You never do that.
Oh, shut up. Stop talking while I'm interrupting. Blue Beetle. Still,
I was going to say
still want to see this. Because I noticed the trend of critics are all losers, like the Critical Drinker and Disparu and people like that who hate everything that might actually be intelligent or, you know, thoughtfully written.
I'm already expecting them to hate it because he's Hispanic.
Well, yeah, oh no.
Critical yeah, there's Drinker that going came for down a lot of people.
It. Right, he came down on it. It's like, that was my first hint that I want to see this movie. Right?
Yeah.
If he didn't like it, yeah, I think I want to see this because... He hates anything that's even remotely artistic.
It's the 2006 Blue Beetle that everybody liked at the time, Jamie Reyes. He's the more popular one.
Yeah.
He had a fun sidecast and stuff up here.
Yeah, but again, like I say, I use them as a barometer for what I want to watch.
Yeah.
Right. If they hate it, then it means it's probably halfway decent.
See, I don't use them just because if they hate it, it means it's likely to be commercially successful. Because they're courting the rage.
Well, they're rage, and they've got this bullshit conservative crap going on all the time.
It is. It's just a grift,
know, open
too.
Open your fucking
like,
minds for 5 minutes, guys.
I don't think they're necessarily true believers. I think they've figured out that conservatives like being angry.
Well, they have, and they've also figured out that you put a thumbnail up there, you know, with a little title going, "This is crap." Everybody's going to click on it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, which is why I say they think it's going to be commercially successful rather than good. Where they're not quite to like the Shadiversary level of getting mad about Princess Peach wearing pants, and Gnome not making that up.
Oh yeah, I heard. Yeah, yeah, she was in her motorbike outfit or something, and people were getting all twitchy over it. And it's like, oh,
yeah, people were mad that
have
a woman
never
dared to wear
Mario
pants.
Mario Kart? Fuck
yeah,
off.
It's like, seriously,
no.
I played Mario Kart.
This is a man who dresses like a Knight Templar and wishes he was on the Fifth Crusade against Muslims and feminists
and maybe
black people.
Yeah. Then maybe stay away from fucking Mario.
Bill's right. I mean, this guy's not even remotely human being. So it's like, dude. You know, like I say, just open your mind for 5 goddamn minutes. Let the air in. Right?
Well, I maintain those people's problem is that they did open their mind, and then their brain fell out.
Yeah, it blew too many cobwebs away, and that's all that was holding it in there. Yeah, but anyway, that's just my thought. Just for anybody that actually does watch this, I want to see Blue Beetle more now than ever before. Right, because they were raging about Mario, and Mario was fantastic.
Yeah.
Right.
It took one preview for me to want to see Blue Beetle.
Yeah.
It looked like the fun that the MCU had 5 years ago. Or longer now. Like, Phase 2 MCU's fun.
Yeah. Oh, so Ant-Man.
Fuck off.
Don't go there.
If I didn't think it was going to screw up your recording because you're moving to the one that records each of us on a different track, I would have hung up right there.
Well, it's not like that yet, but still. No, it's been said out loud anyway. So, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to figure if there's any other cool pop culture notes before we go into this fucker.
They're not making Monster House remakes.
There are no Monster House remakes. We're not going to review Monster House.
Yeah, they're making a cool Walking Dead video game. I saw that last night, so that's this morning.
Ooh, that could be fun.
It's called Walking Dead Destinies, and it's taking place between season 1 and 4 of the show, and you can change the course of it.
So it's basically them running around trying to find that dumb kid.
I'm cautious about it because there have been great Walking Dead games, like the Telltale game. But there have also been absolutely dire games, like the Dale game.
This one looks... the graphics don't look good, but that doesn't mean anything, so I'm hopeful that it might actually be good.
That actually potentially means it is a bonus, because it means they didn't waste a ton of time trying to get the graphics perfect and not focusing on anything else.
Well, that makes me think it might be more story-focused, so...
Yeah. Of course, on the other hand, the graphics are crap in the Gollum game, too.
Oh, I just got a Facebook message from Moira.
Oh.
Her PC wouldn't boot up when she got home from dinner.
Oh, that's no. Stranger.
Yeah. Yeah. She said all she's getting is a nasty beeping noise when she tries to boot it up.
That sounds pretty dead.
Yeah. It's like, uh-oh. That's not a good sign. Yeah. So she's not going to have a good night.
No.
But anyway, I guess we shall
go right into the comics.
Yeah, let's do this.
This week it's all Namor all the time.
She won't be able to listen to us talking about Namor, so she might have a better night than she would have. Who am I kidding? She doesn't watch the stream when she's not on.
Fair enough. What, would you?
No.
Okay.
I think Rose is the only one that's watched any of these back.
I hate the way I sound in a recording. I'm not going
to
watch this if I am on.
I'm more likely to
watch if I'm not on.
Yeah, I'm the only one who does click on this on YouTube, aren't I?
No, I click on it when I see it. But... And I go in and check, because I go in and check if anyone's commented on them.
Well, I do comment occasionally.
Yeah. I mean, people that haven't said it to me personally.
Oh, okay. Let's try to make this more successful in Manchester United, shall we?
That shouldn't be hard. Tune
in next week when we have a new co-host.
Because Dan's
going for some unscheduled spelunking in a cave about 6 feet deep.
Wow. Look at the heartbroken Tottenham.
Dan, protect your leg.
Tottenham. You lost to fucking Tottenham. The team that just signed away its star striker.
You know what? I'm going to do Ten Hag a favor. I am personally going to buy Harry Maguire away from the team and send him to your house.
That's not even remotely fun. But I'm not worried about it. He'd miss.
He just ends up
back on your doorstep. Right, knocking on the door. Damn, buddy.
I can't even be mad about that. I should on
Harry
Maguire as much as anyone.
It's Harry Maguire.
That's a valid point, to be honest. Yeah.
That was one of your best lines he'd missed. Can't even be mad.
He just trip over his own feet on the way down your steps.
Well,
I hope that happens. It's our best hope for a successful season.
It could be.
If he breaks his leg, the board can't force us to play him.
My good striker fractures his skull a few years ago, but you guys have to deal with Harry Maguire.
You saw that meme I sent. Liverpool said they were interested in signing Harry Maguire.
That was fantastic.
Oh, we're not falling for that. I thought that was friggin' hilarious. But anyway, let's go back to Ryan.
We have six episodes. Yeah, there is. Six comics this week, and they're all named. We're at issues 71 through 76 of Tales to Astonish. We're going to start right off with issue 71 of Tales to Astonish, which for some reason I didn't have ready to go. There we go. This is titled Escape to Nowhere. Stanley Wright in this one, Gene Colan on art, which is truly a gift.
Oh, yeah.
Coletta on inks.
I look over at the Hulk side after I finish the Namors, and I'm just like, oh, that's not good right next to this.
Yeah. No, it's really not. Fancy Coletta and Gene Colan on cover art. Artie Semicon letters. This is a June 1965 release date. This is a 12-page story, and Dan will kick us off today.
Oh, God help me. Yeah, this is a punishment I get, guys, to just be honest. Yeah,
to be fair, it wasn't on purpose. I didn't know what happened in the issues.
Bullshit.
No, I. Bullshit. Bill knew, but I didn't.
Don't believe him. Seriously, don't freaking believe him. All right, synopsis for Escape to Nowhere, which is basically where the story's going.
Yeah.
And Namor, yeah. Namor is trapped by a giant killer squid that is protecting the cave that has the first clue to Neptune's trident. With nothing else to defend himself, he uses the clue, a shell with Neptune's mark, to slay the creature. Oh, so much for Captain Calamari. He's dead. With the monster dead, Neptune's spear... That would have been a great villain, Captain Calamari. I would have liked that. Neptune's spirit appears before the Submariner and congratulates him for killing another creature. The spirit tells Namor he will have to travel to the Forbidden Depths in order to find the next clue to the Trident's location. Wow. That's so far. Interesting they should put this way. Boring his way out of the cavern. Subtle. Namor's attacked by minions of Warlord Krang in an attempt to kill Namor. The Submariner easily defeats them and swims off to his next location. And so it's a scavenger hunt.
It's a scavenger hunt.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Jesus. Okay. Monitoring this from afar is Krang, who is furious but has not given up destroying Namor. Lady Dormat, his helpless prisoner, vows that if Namor dies, her heart will die with him.
He's not wrong.
She truly loves him. Yeah.
I know, that's why it's funny.
As the Submariner approaches the Forbidden Sea, he senses that he is being followed. Yeah. Turning, he finds an elderly Atlantean who pledges allegiance to Namor, despite the fact that Krang has usurped the throne. Wow. Some fun shit going on now. The Submariner's touched and thanks the Ancient One for his faith in him, resuming his quest. What was the point of all that?
Vashti becomes important later.
Okay.
Yeah. He's actually a pretty good part of the story.
He's still a major point character in Namor's stories up to where I am in like 77.
Wow. Okay. I wasn't expecting that.
Oh, excuse me. Wow. While back in Atlantis, Lady Dormat is consumed with guilt. If she allows Krang to marry her, she could be queen. But she is in love with Namor, who refuses her advances. Okay.
It's Stan Lee writing a romance.
Yeah. With Krang in full control, he begins ruling Atlantis as a dictator, demanding high taxes and having his minions kill whoever opposes him. Cool.
You know, for a guy that's allegedly a dictator and having his minions kill everyone that opposes him, he sure doesn't kill a lot of people who oppose him in this arc.
Oh, okay.
The comic code is a hell of a drug.
Well, yeah, it existed for a reason, just Stan Lee thought it existed to ruin his life. He really didn't, but Stan Lee thought it did. Namor, meanwhile, arrives at the Forbidden Sea and faces his next challenge. The Seaweed Man, a creature made entirely out of seaweed.
It's like Manfiend, but seaweed.
Yeah, well, he can't kelp himself.
And shitty.
Just leave him alone.
Yes, and shitty. I'm just blown past that shitty joke, too.
Oh, shut up. So, Namor's initial attack appears to have no effect on the creature, who then begins to impose its strength upon him. And this story is continued in the next issue.
It sure is. This one didn't get on my nerves as some of the future ones do. I still gave this one a 3.
Yeah. It didn't seem that horrible.
It's actually...
The cover was really nice.
It sounds worse in the synopsis than it was reading.
The synopsis does make it sound worse, because they skim over the fact that half the book is stuff happening in Atlantis that's like... actually interesting. Because, yeah, Namor's just on a scavenger hunt for the next 3 or 4 issues. But the stuff going on with Krang in Atlantis as he becomes more of an unhinged despot is actually pretty good.
Well, it's... I just want to make a note that I do like the cover.
Yeah, it's a good cover.
It's a little more of a modernized style cover than
it's the most over Seaweed Man as ever is.
And I mean, I make fun of Seaweed Man for sucking, but really he only has to fill like 3 pages, so you don't want like a super interesting villain for that.
Like I said, he can't help himself, so, you know, get off his back.
I know sold that the first time for a reason, Dan.
Oh, I'm choking on the bad joke.
I tried. Oh my god, what is this crap? Okay, cover for the next one is really bad.
Well, let's move on to the next one. Bad. That's because they're trying to fit both in.
Yeah.
And also, Krang looks like a racist interpretation of a Chinese person.
Yeah. He's not yellow.
He's not, but that's the only thing holding the bag.
I've read enough comics where that character would actually be painted yellow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Emperor Ming is basically what it is for Flash Gordon.
And no, this Krang is not the living brain from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Really?
That would be better.
Okay.
I'm not a Krang fan, even though he's one of the more prominent Namor villains. But then Namor doesn't really get a good villain until Tiger Shark and Dorcas come along.
Really?
So, issue 72 of Tales to Astonish. The A story. A Prince There Was is the title. Stan Lee, Gene Cole, and Vincent Clutt are all back together. Sam Rosen's on the letters. And this 12-page story. This one says July 1965 release date. And Dan will also get this one.
Just in case. Okay.
Just to keep your heartbeat going.
Yeah, that could happen. Okay, continued from last issue, A Prince There Was. Searching for the second clue to the location of Neptune's trident, the Submariner is forced to fight the Seaweed Man of the Forbidden Sea. Getting leverage to break free of Seaweed Man's grip, Namor manages to get away by causing a whirlpool and swimming past his foe. Finding an iron door with the mark of Neptune, Namor opens it up. Inside he finds a fish. Imagine that. So odd. The fish speaks in the voice of Neptune, urging Namor to go on. Noticing a diamond in the creature's mouth, the Submariner heads off to the Diamonds of Doom, the location of the third and final clue. Furious that Namor continues to survive his trials, Warlord Krang decides that he must wed Lady Dormat as quickly as possible. Going to her room, well, that's a little bold, he demands that she marry him.
But well, her room is more like the prison cell he stuck her in, so it's less bold than you would think.
Oh, okay. She flat out refuses, stating that she loves only Namor. Furious, Krang gasses her and places her in a glass chamber. For a refusal, Krang has Dormat publicly exiled to the Cavern of the Faceless Ones. God, it's like freaking Big Trouble in Little China. Brought there, she is lowered into the realm of the Faceless Ones keeper, Xantor. Do they even try to come up with good names to these guys, or do you just,
no,
you know, bingo ball this crap?
I've read enough Stan Lee sci-fi that, yes, this is him trying.
Well, that's no good. Namor, meanwhile, arrives at the Diamonds of Doom. However, due to the Diamonds of Doom properties, their cascading kaleidoscope radiance. I'm going to reread that just so we can soak in this line. Due to the diamond's properties, their cascading kaleidoscope radiance causes him to lose his strength and vitality. This story is continued in the next issue. Have at it.
I didn't enjoy this one as much. I gave this one a 2. I don't like when it focuses a lot on Krang.
What, even with its cascading kaleidoscopic radiance?
Yeah.
Wow.
This you're is so by hard to please. This is not the most magical single. Issues of this run.
Now, I was getting pretty tired of the scavenger hunt element by this point, but yeah. I actually kind of like them focusing on Krang.
I don't for this one. I do in some of the later ones.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. I gave this one a low 3. And I could, part of that was because I could see what Gene was poking and prodding at the restrictions at him under the comic code with Krang's interactions with Dorma.
Yeah.
He was definitely sending some subtextual messages. For example, the gas was ejected from his belt buckle.
Ooh.
So when she wouldn't marry him, he starts threatening her while fidgeting with his belt, and it was pretty obvious what Jane was trying to apply was going to happen.
Uh-huh.
Which made it seem substantially darker than the average Namor story.
Yes, that's very true. I don't know, it wasn't horrible. To be
it
fair,
was
like,
getting
it
very repetitive at this point. I think if there was one more clue after this, I would have completely checked out of the storyline.
Whoa, moving rapidly on. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be yawning. It's been a long week.
You haven't read the Hawk arc? What are you yawning for?
Savage.
I was going to say it before, but I forgot. Tales to Sonus number 73, A Story by Force of Arms. And the same team, except they give credit to Jack Kirby and Mike Esposito on the cover, since it focuses on Hulk.
That's because it's a Hulk focus.
And then Artie Simic's on letters, August 1965 release date. I'm getting PTSD from this fucking Hulk story. And then 12-page story.
I'm going to point out right now, they missed crediting Colin and Coletta on the cover.
They did. But they missed giving Jack Kirby and Mike Esposito on the last cover. So
I'm not sure they actually did that Hulk face, but that section of Namor at the bottom of the cover is definitely Coletta and Colin.
Why is he fighting Ben Grimm?
I wish it was Ben Grimm.
Well, it looks like him on the cover.
It looks like
I called it a Gorn, but then I realized that the episode of Star Trek doesn't come out for another year and a half.
That's fair.
Because I was going to make a joke in the group chat when Ryan was reading that about someone's been watching Star Trek.
So this one's for Bill to take.
All right. So, having to face the Diamonds of Doom in order to collect the third and final clue leading to the location of Neptune's trident, Namor must also battle against the Demon of the Diamonds, who is immune to the Diamonds' weakening rays. In their initial fight, Namor is still able to hold his own, and even manages to knock off the Demon's crown, which protects him from the Diamond's effect. The Demon, however, recovers the crown, but as he is distracted, Namor summons electric eels to incapacitate the Demon. The eels then absorb the energies from the Diamonds of Doom, making it safe for Namor to collect the final clue. Speaking true to eels, the spirit of Neptune once more congratulates Namor for his ongoing victory. Watching this over his monitors, Warlord Krang is furious that the Submariner continues to succeed in his quest. Learning from the eels that Lady Dorma has been cast to the Faceless Ones as punishment for not agreeing to marry Warlord Krang, Namor has to make a decision if he should continue on for the Trident or save the Lady Dorma. Meanwhile, the people of Atlantis, fed up with Krang's totalitarian regime, stage a revolt in an effort to overthrow Krang's rule. Despite the armed guards and high-tech weapons that Krang has to keep the rebels away, they manage to make it to his throne room. Namor has decided to rescue Lady Dorma, finding her survival more important to him than obtaining the Trident of Neptune. As he speeds towards the Cavern of the Faceless Ones, the selfsame creatures approach the plastic cage that Lady Dorma has been trapped in. And that's the end of the issue.
I thought it was a glass cage.
No, it was always
plastic. You said glass
plastic.
Cage last.
That was a mistake in your synopsis that I didn't pick up on.
Oh, okay.
Fair enough. It was always what plastic. Oh, the Dan's synopsis identified the cage that Dorma was sealed in as glass, and I hadn't picked up on it on the time.
Oh.
But I just read the comic this morning, and it's definitely identified as plastic right from the start.
Hmm. Kind of like Lady Dorma's boobies.
I'm a mistake. Atlantic.
Hey,
Atlantis
now we haven't gotten
great
to the 90s yet.
Buoyancy, Atlantic, buddy.
Atlantis
buoyancy
has great breast augmentation services.
Buoyancy, come on.
We haven't gotten to the 90s yet. The women here mostly have realistic proportions.
Oh, my dear God in heaven.
Right,
as long as we don't look at what Colin does to arms.
Are we still in the synopsis?
No,
we're done it.
Oh, okay. I just had to go make a quick call. So, that was a 3-star for me. I like this one.
Yeah, it was a 3-star for me, too.
I don't really remember what happened because I missed the full synopsis, but I liked it, so...
No, you didn't miss anything.
It's the one with the rebellion and Namor deciding to abandon his quest and go save Dorma.
Oh, yeah, well, that's good. It's character development, so...
Too bad they Namor's completely not as abandoned much of a that, that character development in future Namor arcs.
Well,
he's more likable here, and he immediately goes back to full dick.
Namor's actually really good in this arc. It's a shame
that
they
if they had kept writing him like this, it would have been a strong book.
Between this and the Daredevil before this arc, he's been written really good for the last little bit. Well, yeah. Anyway, I guess we'll move on to 74, a story, which is when fails the quest.
This and cover is horrifying.
Same team here. They have shoutouts for Gene Colan and Jack Kirby here, but none of their pencilers. And
I don't
others
know who
by
penciled
Sam Rosen.
That. I don't know who penciled that Namor, but it wasn't Vince Coletta.
Maybe Gene Colan did it on his own then. I don't know.
I don't know, because Namor is like way more square-jawed than he's been drawing him.
Yeah, he's got a square
face.
What's
wrong with the bad guy's herbs?
Colan is really bad at arms.
Yes,
there's a lot
Dr.
of terrible
Octopus
arms
syndrome
in this. He's the best artist we have at this point in the order, by a long shot, but he is not good at arms.
Yeah, he's even doing some better stuff than Steve Ditko. Gene Colan is really good, but it seems
not
like...
Not this cover, ain't.
No, he not on this cover.
Whoever penciled that is terrible, or inked that
Vince
is terrible.
Coletta, Vince Coletta compliments Gene Colan very well. And obviously he didn't do this cover.
Allegedly, it's Coletta inking the cover, but I don't believe it.
I don't know. I don't believe
because
that.
Because the wiki that I have up
unless
is,
he fucking
identifies
rushed it,
him
the
as
hell.
That's possible because the wiki I have up has him identified as the inker.
Maybe he didn't have any time for this cover, and that's why it's bad.
That's
it's
possible.
Just horrible.
It doesn't look like the style he's been inking, but it
I'm
could be really
this,
rushed.
This managed
Dr. Octopus
to make it
arms
into print.
This is a September 1965 release and 12-page story, and this one's also for Bill. I mean, it's better than the little corner Hulk on the cover, so...
The art on the Hulk is so ugly right now. Like, even by Kirby standards, it's bad.
Yeah, it starts as Ditko, then Kirby takes it over probably because the title's popular.
Yeah, and Kirby tries to draw like he's Ditko.
Yeah,
like,
he does.
When people try to draw like they're Kirby, it works. When Kirby tries to draw like he's Ditko, it's always terrible. His Spider-Man is terrible, too.
Yeah,
anyway, on to this synopsis. Namor has given up his quest for Neptune's Trident in order to rescue Lady Dorma from the Faceless Ones. He arrives in the Faceless Ones' cavern just as they are about to break through the plastic cage, or as this person has spelled it, platy cage, made from mammals that lay eggs.
No platitudes for them.
That she is trapped in. As the Submariner fights through the horde of seemingly mindless creatures, there is a revolt going on in Atlantis against the tyrannical warlord Krang. That's an awkward sentence, even though it's grammatically correct. Other than that, they missed a comma. As the rebellion enters his control room, he manages to escape capture by closing an impenetrable wall in the way of himself and his attackers. So they mean between him and his attackers.
Yeah.
In punishment for the rebellion, Krang sends out his robot tank to bring down mutineers of his rule. The grammar has been good on this, and then I get to this one, like, every sentence is just slightly off, and it's throwing me off.
Yeah.
As this is happening, Vashti the Elder escapes on a specially bred seahorse to seek out the Submariner while Krang calls back his robotank. As Submariner continues to battle the Faceless Ones, Vashti approaches their caverns and is accidentally dropped in when his seahorse frightens, throwing him off. Namor manages to fight off the Faceless Ones as they burst the plastic cage. However, Namor finds that Dorma has been injured by the resulting combustion of the plastic cage. Finding her inches to death, Namor now finds that he is surrounded by the Faceless Ones, and it continues. A lot of stuff happens in this issue that they just glossed over.
We assume the crane, and he says, "Inches, you say?"
Let me get my gas and show you the truth.
Well, he didn't have that much gas ready to go. So.
That's true. He barely knocked her out with it. And this is a woman written by Stan Lee, so she's extremely frail.
I guess we'll stop with the innuendos for a second and talk about this comic. I didn't like this one as much either. This is my other one I didn't really care for. I gave this a 2.
I gave it a 3, not because of Namor treading water, but because of the stuff with the rebellion that was actually interesting.
See, I liked the Namor section more than you. I didn't like the focus on, like, Dorma being trapped for faceless ones and shit.
Yeah, see, my problem with the Namor one was when the issue started, Namor was fighting the Faceless Ones. And when the issue ended, Namor's still fighting the Faceless Ones. Nothing happened in Namor's story.
That happens
it's just
a
like
couple
five
of these issues.
Yeah, it's just like 5 pages of him just punching people.
I don't even know if I cared for the Namor stuff in this one. I just did. This one didn't really do much for me because no progress on the main story, or supposed main story, and then the Dorma stuff's a little meh. So,
I was actually, and I think I'm benefiting when I reread it from having read more of Namor. The fact that the Atlanteans actually rebelled against the usurper.
That I do like that part.
Yeah, like, in the future, they just meekly go along with whoever usurps Namor's throne in this issue. And so the fact that they actually stood up for themselves this time is interesting.
That's my favorite part of the comic. That almost pushed it over 2 or 3 for me, but not quite. That's the best usage of Krang in this whole arc, in my opinion, is when the Atlanteans try to usurp him.
See, I thought Krang was a pretty good villain here.
He's fine, but he's not exciting at all.
If they didn't repeat the Namor gets usurped storyline ad nauseum in his book, this would be a good arc.
See, and I know they do this a lot, so that doesn't help for me either.
Yeah,
even though I haven't read them.
I don't think I'm spoiling anything by saying that Namor loses his throne like every 3 weeks.
No, because they go back to it all the time. Really. They go back to it too much. They need more original stuff for him.
Yeah, and that's the big problem with Namor's book. They have like 3 good ideas, and they just keep using them. Like, there's Namor loses his throne, Namor attacks the surface world, and Namor befriends random people from the surface world. Like,
and
those are the only stories.
And more modern times, we get offshoots of some of those ideas. It's Namor attacks the surface world offshoot of Wakanda versus Atlantis.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. At least he's not chasing Sue Storm all over the place. So.
Yeah, I'm glad they got rid of the rapey elements of Namor.
Yeah. Yeah.
For now.
It stays gone for quite a long time.
Does it? Okay.
I haven't read anything where he's going after Sue Storm after this point.
I think he does again. Maybe it's in the 80s. I'm not sure.
It might be, or it might have happened and I've just forgotten because I've read a lot of comics and it might have just gotten filed into it's already happened in my mind.
So, let's move forward with this arc. Only two left. Tales to Astonish, number 75, Ace Door here. The end of the quest. Amen. The same team here. Jack Kirby and Gene Colan get credits on the cover. Sam Rosen on letters. This is the best Hulk cover probably for a while. And that's not saying a lot. October 1965 release date. This is a 12-page story. And I will be taking these last couple. Continued from last issue, the Submariner holds the nearly lifeless Lady Dorma in his hands, ready to defend her from the army of the faceless ones that now approach him. Just before he thinks they are about to attack, they suddenly stop in Namor's visit by the spirit of Neptune. He tells Namor that he has forsaken this task of claiming Neptune's trident, the key to reclaiming Atlantis from Warlord Clerk Krang. However, when Namor explains he did it to rescue the life of Lady Dorma, Neptune is touched that the Submariner has feelings. I mean, gave up his quest for the love of another and deems worthy of the trident. Vashti the Elder watches as the
like he didn't realize this was the last test when the same eels that delivered the message from Neptune told him where Dorma was and to go save her. I didn't mention this when the eels told him because I wanted to not spoil that he didn't fail the quest, but it should have been pretty obvious that that was the next test to go save Dorma.
Yeah, Namor was a little silly there to think he failed. Vashti the Elder watches as the faceless ones suddenly disappear and Namor is and Namor is given the trident of Neptune. I'll make my own fucking words. Revealing himself to Namor, Vashti praises the Submariner on his success and tells the true Prince of Atlantis what is transpiring in his oppressed nation. With not a moment to lose, Namor swims off toward home in hope of reviving Lady Dorma to health with a revitalizer ray, with Vashti trailing behind carrying his trident.
Make Vashti the rightful ruler of Atlantis since he's the one who arrives in Atlantis with the trident?
Yes,
technically, yes.
Vashti. Arriving outside Atlantis quickly, Namor's superior swimming skills allow him to dodge the guards' ray blasts and smash through the main gates. Once within the kingdom's walls, Namor is attacked by Crane's robot tank. However, Namor makes short work of it, taking Dorma's unconscious body to the medical facilities. He preps the revitalizer ray. Krang, in an attempt to stop Namor from saving his lover's life, attempts to short circuit the device. However, Namor spots him and having Vashti toss him the trident, pins Krang's hand with it. Finally, face to face with his foe, Namor prepares for the final battle. The story is continued next issue.
I love how Namor leaves the trident with Vashti so he can swim way faster to Atlantis, and then gets there 3 minutes before Vashti does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing I want to make fun of, I mean, I like this story, but there's some stuff I wanted to make fun of in it.
Oh, that's probably the best issue of the year.
Yeah, Atlantis has walls. Not a dome. Walls.
Make Atlantis great again.
It's a walled city. Underwater. Populated entirely by people who can swim in three dimensions.
And breathe water.
Well,
that's
less of
a dome either.
Yeah, but the point is for defensive structures. Walls don't do anything. You can swim over them.
What? Walls don't do anything?
Things would be better if they were redder under the sea.
All right, Sebastian.
Just saying.
And not the good one who played Winter Soldier ever, either.
I really like this one. It's the best issue of the arc. This is one of the times where art doesn't always take factor in the ratings on comics, but this is the time where it does because the art is so good in this issue and the next issue. That it kind of inflates my rating a little bit. I gave this one a 4. I really enjoyed this one.
I gave this one a 3. I will say the art is the reason the next one gets a 3 from me. It probably would have been a 2 because not much actually happens in it.
The art carries the
but
next
the art
one,
carries
sure,
it.
Too.
Because I really don't like mind reading transition issues if they look good. But this one is fantastic. I make fun of some of the dumb stuff that exists because the writers and artists tend to not consider what being underwater actually means. Like, the Atlanteans uttered in a couple of occasions, just walk around on the bottom. They have a tank instead of, like, a submarine. And their robes just hang down like they would in air instead of, like, billowing because the water makes them buoyant.
No, I don't know. It seems like things are going swimmingly
down there.
That's
to keep everybody's modesty. No. Anyway, let us move on to the last comic for today.
Please.
This is Tales to Astonish, number 76A story. Same teams, of course. I don't know. Jack Kirby's given a credit on art here, which is obviously a mistake.
No. Look at those faces. Those aren't
Gene
Colan.
On the cover or in the book?
On the cover. Those aren't
Colan. He's given it in the book.
Oh, you're right. He's
given
it in the book. I think they put that on the wrong line because those look like Kirby faces, especially Dorma.
Yeah, maybe he's supposed to be credited for the cover. I could see that. Because that does look like a Kirby face there now that you say that.
It's a Kirby cover, hands down.
Yeah, it does look like one.
Well, no question.
Because the art was too beautiful in here for Jack Kirby to be involved, I think.
Yeah, no, it was Coletta inside, but this cover.
Artie Simic does letters. A November 1965 release date, so we're almost to 66 in this title. 12-page story, and I'll be taking this one. Uneasy Hands Ahead is the title of this one. And there we go. Continued from last issue. Failing an attempt to prevent Namor from using the revitalizer ray on Lady Dorma, Warlord Crane faces the wrath of the true Prince of Atlantis. The Submariner beats the cowardly Crane into unconsciousness before turning the revitalizer ray on to heal Lady Dorma. Turning the device to full power, Namor succeeds in revitalizing his true love. Ooh la la.
Ooh la la.
With Crane dethroned and locked up, the people of Atlantis celebrate the return of the true ruler. During the celebrations, Namor asks Lady Dorma to sit by his side and asks Vashti the Elder to work as his advisor in the future, making him a lord of Atlantis. After the festivities, well, that's the least you could do for him. After the festivities, Namor asks that Crane be brought to him for punishment. Much to Crane's shock, Namor orders him exiled from Atlantis forever and is thrown out of the kingdom.
That's just blatantly wrong. Krang anticipated Namor throwing him out and had banked his future plans on that.
Yeah, he already had a big mattress there to land on.
His plan was actually to get... I'm just not going to respond to that, Dan, so you can stop staring at me like that. But his plan was actually to get...
You guys miss me when
so
I'm
that
not
he
here.
Could go off and plan his next means of usurping Namor's throne.
His hope was being exiled, but I think it's kind of implied that he's a little surprised he wasn't killed. But
not
I mean,
in the comic
told
though.
You,
I read it this morning, and he's literally okay. Like, "It's exactly like I anticipated," as he walks away from the city.
Well, that's good then. I guess. I mean, it's been a while since I've read it, so...
Yeah.
Whatever.
No, he definitely anticipated getting evicted and or exiled and says that if Namor wasn't weak, he would have killed him. But he planned on Namor being weak.
Haven't we all? And I don't just mean the storylines.
Just after Crane's departure, Atlantis is suddenly shook up by a powerful quake. When the crisis is over, Namor believes that the damage is wrought by the surface men's nuclear bomb tests and decides that it is time that he returns to the surface to fight for the kingdom of Atlantis. Didn't last long just in Atlantis, and the story will be continued, but not anytime soon.
For now, he has to kiss the girl.
So, I gave this one a 4 as well.
That's not coming for like another 15, 20 issues.
Oh.
But, yeah, I gave this one a 3. A lot on the strength of the art. The story needed to happen. On its own, it wasn't that interesting because we're really just wrapping up loose ends from the previous issue. I mean, he literally beats Krang in like a page and a half.
Yeah, but I mean,
which I like.
Yeah. This does technically finish the arc, and it's more of an epilogue for half of it too.
Yeah, it's a transition because we wrap up all the loose ends from the Krang arc. And then we set up what his next story is going to be.
Exactly. But it's a pretty good transition issue, I think. It's an easy read. It makes sense. A character growth for Namor not being a dick for now.
Yeah.
And the beautiful art, I ran with the four on this one, like the last issue.
And one thing I really liked is that he beat the fuck out of Krang in like a page and a half. Because this is the first time he's faced Krang in a fair fight. When he first arrived, Krang had the entire army of Atlantis at his back.
Exactly. This is how the fight should have gone.
And then, all the way through, Krang was trying sneaky stuff to actually beat him. And so then, when they finally get a fair fight, it shows that Krang is not Namor's equal.
This last issue was very logical.
Yeah, it's really good, and I wish they did more transition issues like it. Even in the modern day, they tend to fail a lot at them.
So yeah, that's where I justify my reading.
I'm not judging for that. This is as good as
a transition issue gets, pretty much.
I wouldn't have been mad to buy this comic, and usually when I buy a transition issue, I'm disappointed because, even in the modern day, they tend to be boring, and this one wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad.
And the beautiful art to go with it. We got some beautiful Atlantean landscape shots for this, too.
Yeah. Oh, Gene Colan was miles ahead of anyone else doing art.
Gene Colan, including Steve Ditko, and we've raved on about how much we love Steve Ditko. Yeah. But Steve Ditko, the one part he excels above everybody else still is his fight scenes. But besides that,
and
Gene Colan is the number one
artist. Like when he does weird dimensions and stuff for Doctor Strange, that's really good. But when he tries to draw like an ordinary scene, it can be kind of dull, and Gene Colan's like cityscapes pop. And
they
it's
do,
not just
as shown in this issue.
Yeah, and it's not just because they're underwater in like a unique place. Because as I mentioned last issue, the art team and the writers tend to not consider what being underwater actually means. So everyone's just acting like they're in a normal city instead of like having people swimming everywhere and like really embracing the three-dimensionality of it.
Yeah. So yeah, shout out to Gene Colan for this whole thing because his stuff has been awesome. But yeah,
or Adam Austin, as he's known at the time.
Yes.
I assume he's still working for DC at this point as well, so he had to use a pseudonym.
Probably. That would make sense.
Because a lot of artists did that.
Probably. But yeah, that was this week's comics. Not too painful, really. It's pretty good. We'll talk about what's coming next week, so you guys can be excited or disappointed. Choose your battle. So we are going to start off with a really good comic with Sergeant Fury and Assassin Commandos number 18.
Really good comic with a really bad cover.
Yeah, but that sums up multiple Sergeant Furies. Fantastic Four number 39 will then take place next. Actually, the rest of the episode is going to be Fantastic Four as we get issues 39, 40, 41, 42, and 43 with our big story arc of the Thing having a falling out with the Fantastic Four. And Dr. Doom's return as well, but that's kind of less important, believe it or not.
Doom.
And another return with the Frightful Four. So there's a lot happening in those five issues of Fantastic Four. So it should be an interesting episode.
This is the point where it was no longer able to be ignored that Fantastic Four is becoming good.
Yeah. Fantastic Four is about to take what should hypothetically be its rightful place as Marvel's number one title. Though a lot of time it's definitely Spider-Man. But
through this run of Fantastic Four being great, I tended to still enjoy Spider-Man more, but I think objectively a lot of times Fantastic Four was as good or better. It's just I don't terribly like Fantastic Four as a comic.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I've never liked them that much. I like Ben.
They've grown on me more over the years.
They've grown on me, but they'll never be one of my favorites.
Exactly. Yeah, there's just more interesting characters out there. Their team dynamics are fun. Ben's the standout, of course. I have a soft spot for Sue, but not this Sue, when Sue actually is an actual character, human being.
I haven't read Sue being good.
I have.
Because
that's
buy Modern Fantastic Four, because I was never interested in them. So my read-through is really my only exposure to them, and Sue is still not good where I am. She's better when she is here, but she's still not consistently good.
When Sue becomes a natural human being and is competent and actually like a genius herself, it's much more enjoyable.
Because I mean, where I am, they finally started writing a good main character woman, and that's Carol Danvers as Miss Marvel. And I'm only like 5 issues into that.
Wow, and that's the best she probably is until she becomes Captain Marvel.
Probably the best she is when she's Captain Marvel, too, because I don't like Carol as Captain Marvel. At that point, she's got no personality.
The current run's really good, so that might be
the exception. I haven't read that one. I read her a lot in the early 2000s, and she was terrible there.
Yeah.
Civil War 2.
Civil War 1, Civil War 2, both terrible Captain Marvel Odies. Actually, she might have still been Miss Marvel in Civil War 1. I don't remember when
she was Miss Marvel
in
Civil War 1.
But
she didn't become Miss Marvel to 2012. Or Captain Marvel, I mean.
Either way, she had no personality around then.
True. Well, that is next week's lineup. Come back. Sergeant Fury, Fantastic Four shouldn't be too awful. I mean, it wasn't too awful. I've read it. But, yeah. Go watch, I haven't uploaded it yet, but it's going to be uploaded before this, so go watch the stream Bill and I did yesterday of episode 4 of our WCW run for TEW. That was fun. We got the big pay-per-view out of the way, and we will be back next week with another episode for that, and we'll see about the week after.
Watching our WCW run, things go horribly wrong in our planning and us have to book on the fly.
Yes, they do. Anyways, if you're watching this on YouTube, please like, subscribe, comment, even share if you would like to. We're available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and of course Spotify. If you're on Spotify, let us know why Crane is your favorite. Anyway,
we don't really have a shitty villain to choose this week. It's Crane or nothing.
We will see
you Seaweed Man.
Yeah, let us know why you love Seaweed Man. Anyways, we'll see you on the next episode, and peace out.
Have a good
one,
everyone.
Guys.